T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
So a lot of conversation as it regards the Bears. It's a big day at the NFL Combine when your GM talks and your head coach talks, and regardless of what they say and how they skate around all the questions offered to them, Ryan Pace doesn't talk a whole heck of a lot, and he did today. You caught something from Matt Nagy, though, as it regards the coaching staff he's assembled. This idea of Juan Castillo, the new offensive line coach, as a guy who's going to push people to the right places or maybe even pass to those places?
Yeah, he said it about DeFilippo when he said this is a guy who's not afraid to take the gloves off and be demonstrative and maybe be a bit of a bad cop. Sounds like it's the same for their offensive line.
Coach Castillo, here's the best part of him is he pushes you like none other. So when you get out to practice and you see how hard he works these guys, he's going to push them to their brink. But at the same time, they're going to know that he fall for, on a sword for them.
Push him to their brink. Does he mean physically? Does he mean mentally? Does he mean both? For him to go there and use that as a reason why, maybe we can fill in the blanks for what he thinks was missing from the previous staff.
Maybe. Listening to that, though, makes me feel like a little bit like Matt Nagy feels a little bit like Theo Epstein's felt the last 2 years. You know, that they've got what they've got. They have the players they have. The ability to maneuver around roster-wise isn't really there for them, especially when it comes to the offensive line. Kyle Long is gone, and they freed up some money there, but you know what it's going to be. It's going to be Massey and then whatever new right guard they find, plus James Daniels, plus Cody Whitehair, and I guess they could flop those back and forth if they felt like it. And then Charles Leno on the left side. It kind of feels like, you know, our team's on the field, coach, so coach them harder. Try harder. We're going to try harder this year. We're going to coach harder. We're just going to do all of that stuff harder. And it'll be better this year because it has to be. And I don't really like those answers. I don't really like having to be in that spot. It might be that Juan Castillo is able to better coach an offensive line philosophy that marries with Matt Nagy's overall scheme, this idea of being pass catchers as opposed to run blockers. You know, the guys are going to step back and just hold off a little while, create a pocket that Mitch can theoretically step up in, even though that makes me shake some when I say it. Like the idea that could be better for Castillo than it was for offensive line coaches past, fine, I guess. But they're going to have to do it with the guys they've got.
You're learning about your Bears today because it's not often that Ryan Pace speaks. He's not like most general managers in sports, so his words carry more weight when we actually get words that aren't being filtered through a team broadcast, when he actually has to stand in front of independent media trying to play an adverse role in getting information from him. Northwest Side, Dave, you're on the Score.
Yeah, a couple of comments. I think everyone agrees. Trubisky's, either way, he's on a short leash. There's no way around that. And Pace is tethered to him. I think he gets fired regardless with Trubisky. My problem.
Wait. You think he gets fired regardless of what?
No, not regardless. I misspoke. Trubisky and Pace are tight at the hip. I just don't think he. I don't know what the contract with Pace is, but I just don't think he survives misdrafting this kid if he just doesn't work out. I hope he does, but I don't think he's gonna. But that's not the reason for my call. My call was about Nagy. And his first minute of his press conference, in two sentences, he said he's working at being a great coach, and then he's working at being a great play caller. He's not Andy Reid or Sean Payton or Kyle Shanahan. this guy is wearing two hats when I don't think he's doing a great job with either one. I think he's got to focus. He's the head coach. There's 32 jobs, and he's on the job training and wants to be great. They need him to be great now. They got a defense that can win.
He was coach of the year 2 years ago.
Okay, two years ago. Is that lightning in a bottle? Or do we take this last year and possibly this year?
You look at both. You look at his body of work in its entirety.
And I think when we look back on it, and they probably all die on the Trubisky Hill, I hope that they get the credit or the fire they deserve, because there is complicit or more than one player.
Do you think the coaching staff draws criticism?
What?
You don't think the coaching staff's been criticized?
I don't think Nagy has been held to the standard that Trubisky has been held to as the quarterback.
Oh, I do. I do. Nagy got pounded all year last year. Where you been? He got destroyed.
I think his leash is a lot longer than Trubisky's, and I think he's just as accountable.
Yeah,
I really think that.
Dave, appreciate the phone call, man. I think his leash is longer than Mitch Trubisky's is. And whether that's fair or not, you know, I mean, you don't think it is.
I think there's a reason why. Because I think we knew when he was hired. People who knew him well said you might be getting him a year or two too early.
It's true. But if you were looking at the track record that Dave wanted us to look at, Matt Nagy's track record offensively is a team that struggles to score 20 points with any kind of regularity.
Correct.
There are absolutely issues with play calling, with a run game, with an established identity, just from both an eye test and a statistical test. Those things kind of all, if not fail, then come real close to doing so in 2 years of Matt Nagy's offense. And that's why you've had an entire shift in, well, as large a shift as you have had in offensive personnel, well, coaching personnel. I mean, you've got a remake of people. Sure, it's a Dave Ragone elevation, but I think that's mostly because they've identified a guy that they think works well regardless of system or regardless of quarterback. I don't know if they're right on that, but I think that's why they made him the passing game coordinator and elevated him within the coaching scheme and coaching ladder that they did. I think Matt Nagy's wearing the coaching hat fine. Not great, not poorly. But I do think that it speaks to his ability to be a head coach in the NFL that he was able to stop the team from fracturing completely last season. When you have that big a difference between offensive output and defensive output, and it's so damn clear that the offense is letting the other side of the ball down, you get teams that fracture. We talked about this a lot last season. The fact that Matt Nagy was able to stave that off matters. How much is totally up to you. As a Bears fan, you get to determine that. I can't tell you how much to determine that. That matters to me a good deal, but not enough to overcome any kind of deficiency offensively or any kind of continued endorsement of Mitch Trubisky throughout a 16-game season in 2020.
Yeah, I would look at a couple different things here. I would evaluate his season as a play caller and as an offensive mind was pretty bad. They were always behind everything. They were completely discombobulated. There was no rhyme or reason to what they were doing. While that was happening, I think he did a decent job as a head coach with steering his team to 8-8 when that thing could really have nosedived on
Absolutely.
You. Where there have been teams across the league that have just said, yeah, you know what, we're tuning this guy out, forget it, we're quitting. They didn't, despite serious injuries across the board.
For Ryan Pace, I do think a different decision-making process has to be involved. Because it's not just 2 years of Ryan Pace. You know, you can look at the 12 draft picks he's had in the first and second rounds. Some wins, a lot of losses, a lot of meh. You've got Eddie Jackson late, who gets a big contract. He's the highest paid safety in the league right now. And that's absolutely a medal he gets to wear on his lapel, right? Good for you. You got one there. But I really do think that a GM's future in this league, that his title, that his reputation is at stake when you make the move he did for the quarterback he got. I think he needs to be held accountable for that. And I wouldn't let him pick the next one. But I don't think the Bears are going to hold him to the same kind of accountability that I'm willing to.
This segment is brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Great food at a great price at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. Joe and Munster's on the score. Hello, Joe.
Hey, guys. Hey, I just wanted to ask if people have taken notice of the order of position coaches that were hired. You had Juan Castillo and then the tight end coach, and then you had Bill Lazor and then DeFilippo. Mm-hmm. People talk about Trubisky as being a trash quarterback. In 2018, this kid led the NFL in air yard completions over 50-plus yards. And, yes, I know they had a bad year. But, I mean, when he came back from that torn labrum he had against Minnesota, okay, his first pass of the second half came with being down 26-10 the second half. So, I mean, I get it. It's a quarterback-driven league. GMs are tied to quarterbacks, but it's time to really, really, you know, take a deep dive and figure out just what is hurting this team, and it's really the offensive line.
I give you that, Dave, that the offensive line hasn't been as good as it should be, but they were fine pass blocking last year. Look at the numbers. Look at the sack totals. Look at the pressures. They were fine when it comes to pass, but could they have been better? Yeah, absolutely.
Mitch Trubisky wasn't bad because of blocking.
No, but it just wasn't.
Mahomes has a top five offensive line. Top five.
Yeah.
You're just saying that? You just think they're a top five offensive line?
If you think the offensive line is the difference between Patrick Mahomes and Mitchell Trubisky, I don't know what to tell you.
That's where we're at here. I don't know if he's got anything to say to it. There you go. It's not. That's not the difference.
No, if you flip-flop those guys, the Chiefs are way worse and the Bears are way better.
Mitch isn't accurate. He fails to make reads. Hell, we were breaking down tape last season where there's an RPO and he reads the wrong guy. He doesn't see open receivers. That's on a play where the offensive line is doing a particular something on that RPO to give Mitch the look he needs to diagnose where he needs to go with the football.
His own head coach keeps saying it publicly. He needs to understand what's going on better. He needs to watch film better. He needs to read coverages better. He doesn't know what he's seeing. He's telling you that. That's not an offensive line problem.
No, it's not. For what it's worth, Pro Football Focus ranked the offensive lines last season. The Chiefs came out 16th in the NFL. The Bears came out 25th in the NFL. And part of that was the pressure they allowed and how quickly they allowed it, which is a problem. But pass blocking, that they were okay. They were fine. They were league average. And in my opinion, if you're able to put league average out there as a unit like that, as an offensive line specifically, then it is on the quarterback to raise the level of play everywhere else. That didn't happen.
There's an email from Stonecutter who said, Connor, after you reported the Bears met with Jake Fromm, he said, Jake Fromm's going to be a Bear. I've believed this ever since the Trubisky situation became untenable.
Really?
Jake Fromm basically is Alex Smith. He's the total inverse of Trubisky. Weak arm, not super mobile, but can read the defense and is more accurate. I fully expect the Bears to make him their number one target, and I won't be surprised if they move to the back end of the first round to take him. Yeah, the Alex Smith comp falls apart with athleticism, though, because Alex Smith could really move.
Yeah, he could.
In college, you remember him at Utah. He was very athletic.
Sure, and even in the first couple of years of the NFL, he was as well. But remember what unlocked Alex Smith in his last healthy season, I'm trying to remember this exactly right, in his last healthy season with the Chiefs was their willingness to get downfield with the football. I remember the conversation pretty vividly because it was finally Alex Smith was being unleashed and asked to go downfield. And certainly the weapons around him helped some, and maybe he had some of those with the San Francisco, maybe he didn't, but he was finally pushing the ball downfield. And at some point, if accuracy is a given, if you're able to put the ball where you want to, being willing to go downfield opens up other things for you, whether you hit those shots or not. I mean, granted, you gotta hit some of them. You can't just be like a completely loose cannon out there and not hit a damn one. But the willingness to push the ball downfield changes it some. We saw that with Joe Flacco and the Ravens when it was all this, is Joe Flacco elite, right?
No.
It's the same kind of conversation.
No, he's not. This is Jeff in Tinley Park on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, covering for Lawrence Holmes.
Hey, guys. I've got a couple questions, but to actually to add on to that, Jake Fromm, thank you, Dan, for that assessment. He's Jake Fromm is – I'm not a big Jake Fromm fan, but I'm also not a big Mitch fan either. But what I do wonder if Mitch was taken in another draft, because to your point, Dan, you said earlier that we heard that he might be being taken a year or more too early. So,
no, I said that about Nagy.
Oh, about Mitch being taken a year too early.
No, I said that about Matt Nagy.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, I still think Mitch was taken a year or two too early. You know, with his little college experience. So, would we be being more patient if we weren't comparing him to the other two? If those two are not in his same draft, I mean, you look at Baker Mayfield. You know, being with, you know, would he be, if Mitch was taken in that draft, would we be more patient with him as opposed to how we are now? Because
maybe
the speed that Mahomes and Watson ascended to, I mean.
Maybe, but it doesn't make it unfair.
No, I guess it is. That is true. And I guess, well, to my point about what I was going to say about Ryan Pace is every time I kind of like Ryan Pace, but he's either fired up about something or he doesn't have an answer or he won't answer something. He can never give you like a general, you know, it's either he's, like I said, he's super fired up about something or he won't even bother answering it. And it frustrates me. And I understand that's his right to do that. Maybe we'd be doing the same thing if we were in his shoes, but it's infuriating that there's no clarity. It's just, continue talk, blah, 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 and just wait till a move is made.
And then they don't talk. That's the thing. And then when the move is actually made, they don't immediately come out to tell you how, why, when, and what went into it. And that's why we take it for granted that, you know, a guy like Stan Bowman, immediately after the trade deadline, there he is. He's on with Mullen Hall telling you, here's why we did this, and here was this, and here was this. And it's not always satisfying, but at least the guy's available. The guy's there. You know, Rick Hahn does it all the time. Theo and Jed do it all the time.
Constantly. Even in a conversation where a GM doesn't reveal a whole lot, you'll still find some ways in which they talk about some things and talk about some options and talk about what's keeping them from saying what you'd like them to say. There were two instances, I caught two where Ryan Pace gave you hard and fast answers about what the Bears have and don't have. One was the draft picks. The fact that they expect to have 8 draft picks, 2 twos, a compensatory 4, a 5, 2 sixes, and 2 sevens. And another was the potential of an extension to one very meaningful player. We'll tell you who that was in case you missed it. We'll talk about what it means to perhaps extend one of the most meaningful Bears in the last couple of seasons. Bernstein and McKnight in for Lawrence Holmes. Bears conversation at 6:07.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The score.
You talked about there being a sequential order to everything. Where does Allen Robinson and the potential of an extension fit in that sequence? Is that something?
Yeah, it's something, you know, we keep those things inside, but it's obviously something we've talked about. He's a good player and does a lot for our team on and off the field, and he's a guy that we'd like to have a Bear for a long time.
Yeah, considering that was the guy your quarterback could see. And everybody else apparently wearing cloaking devices, but the only guy who was visible on some plays to your quarterback, yeah, you might want to keep him around. Although the counterintuitive Patrick Manley thought was bench him, force your quarterback to see other people.
Yeah, I don't think that works. Some couples fool themselves into thinking that can work for them, mm-hmm. but it never does. But it could work for Mitch, taking Allen Robinson off the field. I was just happy to hear Ryan Pace get asked a question and then be able to answer it. Yes, we've talked about a contract extension for Allen Robinson. It would be nice to have a talented receiver there. Robinson enters the last year of his contract with the Bears in 2020. The number that SpotRack has on him is $15 million of a cap hit. And as an industry, do we have to come up with whether we're saying SpoTrack?
Yeah, it's not SpotRack.
SpotRack.
It's something track.
SpoTrack.
SpoTrack?
SpoTrack feels weird for me to say. And I know because I say
sport.
Things weirdly.
It's sport,
but there's no R there. It's SpotRack. So, maybe just use overthecap.com.
How about SpoTrack? Like raccoon.
I think that could be it. It's SpoTrack.
Okay.
I was glad to hear Ryan Pace give an actual answer on things. And I... You know, the text line is going back and forth, 67011. And the text zone's brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin, by the way. Save time. Shop online, rosenhyundai.com. About whether or not what Ryan Pace says matters, because what he does next, signing QB2, may change the entire dynamic of what he said previously.
Or trading for QB2.
Or trading for, sure. Whatever guy they bring into that room and however they change it. I just, honest question here. I don't mean to... Honest question. What's the correlation between GMs who are bad at the talking game and good at the GM game? Is that a high correlation?
I have no idea. It's a really good question because there have been really well-spoken, glib, entertaining GMs
who suck,
who we found are just much better at broadcasting.
That happens.
Hawk Harrelson sounded great.
There are some really bad talking GMs, guys who don't understand how to play that game, who are good once they make decisions.
Mike Rizzo with the Nationals.
Yeah, they exist.
But like, remember, I mean, Hawk Harrelson was a GM. He was fun.
Oh,
Hawk wants you.
Hey, I try and forget Fisk out.
Hawk, why are you moving the fences back? Well, our thumpers can hit it out anywhere.
Why is Fisk playing in the outfield? Don't know.
Do you have any data to suggest that your home runs traveled further? Nope.
They just want it more.
But you're
swing harder.
But you're moving the fences back because you think that the White Sox home runs traveled for. Yes, I do.
I have important news. I reached out to Michael Giannitti, who is the founder of SpotRack.com.
Ooh. Yes.
SpoTrack.
So,
but it's
good
sports.
With
it's not SpoTrack. Unless you're in St. Louis, it's not Sparts.
SpaTrack is how he said it.
SpoTrack.
It feels weird to me. Gonna have to get used to that.
It's not SpotRack.
It's still GIF, though, regardless. It's GIF.
No, it's GIF.
No.
I thought we settled that.
No, we didn't settle
it. I thought the creator of GIF said it's GIF.
Hell with that guy.
Yeah, he's wrong.
The hell with that guy. It's not. It's GIF.
I prefer saying GIF.
Graphics. That's the first word. Right. Graphics. Nobody says graphics.
That's the how. That's the people.
It's the people.
That's the G.
Peach.
Is the how.
Old Peach Fleck.
So on SpoTrack.
SpoTrack.
SpoTrack. Yes.
SpoTrack.
Not Star Trek.
I hate this game we're playing.
Sucks when your own games get turned on you, doesn't it?
It really does. It really, truly does. They were all fun and
no
lighthearted.
Fun
what I was
get
doing.
For caring about the English language so much.
No fun when the rabbit
such
got
such a crappy language.
Well, it really is. There are no rules in the English language. It's just did you understand what I said or not? You know, Mitch is the only quarterback on the on SpoTrack. By the way, if you scroll through it, you look. Mitch is the only quarterback signed for the Bears right now. I don't know. I wonder how big a room they're willing to make it.
You're going
to
bring the Tyler Bray people out.
I don't want to bring the Tyler Bray people. There's I don't want Tyler Bray.
They're like the clay people. They come out of the walls. Yeah, you don't want to. What was Terry's clay people noise again? It was something like that. He had something.
Was it Lookout Ducks?
No, it was the old Flash Gordon clay people, and he remembered how they sounded.
I don't know the Flash Gordon clay people. I know the South Park crab people, but I don't know the Flash Gordon clay people.
No, I don't either, because he said something. They sound like the clay people. I said, well, what the hell are you talking about? But I had seen.
Did he know?
The only way I saw any of the old Flash Gordons was like, it was on a Ray Rayner or a Ray Rayner-like cartoon show as a kid. To kind of, I remember my dad coming down going, oh my God, that's Flash Gordon? Why are you watching that? And I don't know. It's on.
Turn that off. It's bad and old and kind of racist.
Was it?
Flash Gordon?
I don't
the
think
name of the,
so.
What's the name of the bad guy in Flash Gordon?
Ming the Merciless.
I mean.
Played by Charles Middleton. But he wasn't, you think?
It's a little affected.
Okay. Oh, by the way, can we get to Jerry Jeudy momentarily here?
Sure we can.
Okay.
That's really on your plate, though.
I guess it is, because Jerry Jeudy, the Alabama wide receiver,
yeah,
wears an enormous Star of David around his neck.
Yeah.
A big Mogen David.
A what?
Mogen David.
Oh,
Star,
I didn't know that
Star
was.
Of David.
Oh.
Where do you think the name of the wine comes from?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, really?
No.
Yeah, Mogen David.
That makes a lot of sense now.
And the reason is because people call him Jew because his name is Jerry Jeudy. So people call him that. So it's like, okay, if my nickname is Jew, I might as well wear the costume.
I get the icon.
See, I would...
Thoughts?
I would have a... Well, it's kind of, it's a little appropriative to take a symbol that's some... It's not a chai, so it's probably... It's a chai, the hay and the yud for the symbol of life, the numerological 18, which is often worn as well.
Oh, yeah, okay, I know that one.
And it's offensive as a mezuzah, which would be the Ten Commandments scroll, the literal,
okay.
You put the sign upon your house and the frontlets between thine eyes and upon thy gates and all that, but... So I don't know how to feel about it. I would like it if you really want to go for it. I mean, if you do the Black Hatter and the
prayer shawl
and the payas,
the whole thing.
Yeah, do the fringes right, around the belt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do the whole deal.
Maybe a good hair shirt.
You know, why do you dress like a chassid? Well, I'm Jerry Jeudy, and my nickname is Jew. Like
if he drops a pass, he wears burlap, that kind of thing. Rending of garments, that kind of idea. Like really get into it.
Covers the mirrors back and sits Shiva for his drop passes. I don't know. I think I'm kind of iffy on that one. I
like that you don't know how to feel about it. I mean, no. Here it is, a man wearing a Star of David because his name resembles some other word.
I guess.
And yet it's kind of, I don't know.
If somebody... I don't know. There's no good way to answer this because it's probably harmless, and I don't think he means anything bad by it. But you know that there would be a fatwa against someone for doing something that casually and comedically with something else, right?
Yeah, it doesn't work in a lot of other circumstances.
Right?
Yep. You know there aren't a lot of analogies. There aren't a lot of...
Right.
Nope. The middle of that Venn diagram is nothing.
Right. I guess I'm a little more forgiving because, it's, hey, whatever.
It's fine.
Doug in Huntley, you're on the score.
That whole description of that thing sounds to me kind of like the Bears organization. Connor, you made a good point that, a quarterback needs to lift up the areas of deficiency, or a good quarterback will do that. But I would guess if you look back in history, at any given time in any season, there may be four or five quarterbacks at best league-wide that really have that, innate ability. And so
there are more than that in the NFL last year.
Yeah, I think that number's going up.
Well, I would say I'm talking maybe on the level of Patrick Mahomes.
Well, that would be a level that includes one.
No one has ever been on that level.
So, guys like Breeze or where, Pace came from. So to me, it is more of it just piles more on Nagy and then Pace behind them for the way that they went about this, because I believe that a good coach can win with Mitch Trubisky and his physical attributes. But obviously, I think they're just shoving a square peg in a round hole.
Maybe we'll get to learn if that's the case. I mean, it's not like Mitchell Trubisky's going to be drummed out of the league. Maybe he ends up being the next Ryan Tannehill. Maybe that's Mitch. Maybe someone's like, hey, this guy didn't work in Chicago. Everything was stacked up against him, and nobody taught him correctly, and someone just unlocks him. It's like, oh, that's how I understand what coverages are.
Okay, if that's true, then everybody gets fired.
Right? Twice.
Like over and over again.
Yeah, you never stop firing.
It's like
everybody.
An entire day of press conferences where you just repeat the same thing. Like, we're firing Ryan Pace. We're firing Matt Nagy. 20 minutes later, you do the same thing.
Same press conference. And that if it happens a couple years down the line and these guys already have scattered to the winds and are at other teams, college offensive coordinators, if that happens and Mitchell Trubisky is the moment he holds up the Lombardi Trophy, any of those people fired from those jobs.
It's like when players sign the one-day contract to go retire as a Bear, Ryan Pace would have to sign the one-day contract so he can get fired by the Bears.
Yes,
you have to come back in now.
Yep, they do.
We have to have our moment. We want our pound of flesh. Sit here while we take it from you.
Correct. It's a ceremonial re-firing just because they feel they have to.
I mean, I guess that the league we live in, the league we watch, that the possibility exists that Mitchell Trubisky goes somewhere else and is a quarterback. I can't make space in my head for that though. Like I don't have the bandwidth to create that right now. I truly don't.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena this Thursday when they host Illinois at 7 p.m. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Davenport, it is Don on the Score.
Yeah, I just want to take a somewhat different point about Nagy holding the team together. I don't know if I give him a lot of credit for it, because I think in the environment itself, everybody knew that he wasn't going anywhere. And so that held the team together as much as anything else. I think this is going to be the season to see if offense flounders like a flounder if the team stays together.
Is that an appropriate metaphor to actually?
Sure. One flounders like a flounder. That makes sense. Hey, that's a fair point, Don. I appreciate you making it. I think I'm going to keep giving Pace some credit, Nagy some credit for holding the team together, but that is a fair point that I will do my best to consider going forward. Because you're right, when you underscore the guy's importance and gonna be here-ism, that does change the way players look at things. I still think that there's an opportunity that last season goes even more wrong, and you get guys breaking bad and creating a poor locker room. But you're right. I mean, that kind of insistence on Matt Nagy's future matters some when you evaluate those things.
Just so you know, the verb to flounder is a bastardization of the word founder. It's not because a flounder is likely to struggle or thrash about wildly.
We're checking the OED on this?
I have checked multiple sources.
Okay.
You don't flounder like a flounder.
Well, how does one flounder?
One flounders by, at least according to Merriam-Webster, to struggle to move or obtain footing, to proceed or act clumsily or ineffectually. It says, despite the fact that flounder is a relatively common English verb, its origins remain obscure. It's thought it may be an alteration of an older verb to founder. To founder is to become disabled, to give way, or to collapse, to come to grief, or to fail. So, okay. You don't really flounder like a flounder.
Thank you for that. You know, we've talked a lot about how Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy have talked about their quarterback, Mitch Trubisky. We've played on the Bernstein and McKnight show, we're filling in for Lawrence today. We've played a number of different instances of other GMs and other places in the NFL that have talked differently about their quarterback situations that also sit in a little bit of flux. Sure, there are circumstances that make one different from the Bears, but I think it's worth hearing how players and GMs around the league get talked about and talk about the positions that may be in flux.
We definitely do that. We have baseball coming up at the top of the hour, and I mentioned this baseball story that I got a kick out of that I think they probably got wrong, and we have to fix it. Here's what it is. MLB.com named a memorable cult hero from every team. A cult hero of the franchise.
Okay.
Not necessarily greatest player.
Sure.
But a memorable, important, or fan favorite. They had a sort of shifting definitions of this. But all the beat reporters rolled out their nominee here. An example would be Sam Horn on the Red Sox, who I remember when I was in college as, you know, this like happy, smiling, all or nothing slugger. Bob Hamdog Hamlin from the Royals.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember him. The Twins, they say it's Boof Bonzer.
Oh my God. I watched so many Boof Bonzer games for no reason.
The Astros nominated Jose Lima.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
the Mets have Benny Agbayani. So there's all sorts. It's much more modern, perhaps, but I think that the Cub and the Sox player are just wrong. Like I would have been here all day before I name one of these guys as a cult hero.
So we're going to need some help fixing that. We're going to hear from a GM that might have done it better than Ryan Pace did today. It's Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
A lot of names flying around on the text line as you look at this MLB.com story about each MLB franchise's cult hero.
Cult hero.
And it's sort of loosely defined. The headline is just one memorable cult hero from every team. Players who fit the description for all 30 teams, and they kind of describe it as they go on with what appears to be a sliding scale.
Mm-hmm.
How many guesses will it take for you to get the Cubs cult hero?
Oh, probably a bunch. Is it a guy who did something good, or can it be someone who did something bad? Like, are we talking Brent Brown kind of stuff?
No.
Not Ryan Terrio, it's wrong.
I mean, it kind of should be Ryan Terrio,
okay,
right?
Let me take his name out and just read you the description. You tell me who this is.
Ronald Woo Woo.
His final swing as a big leaguer got him into the bottom of a dog pile. It was a fitting end for one of the most improbable one-time All-Stars in recent memory.
Yeah, okay. That's it? That's Brian LaHair.
Nice. You're right.
Jordan
Bastian wrote it up. A lot of things had to fall into place for the moment to arrive for LaHair. It was fitting considering his entire career consisted of doing everything within his power to defy the odds.
This is the most ridiculous All-Star season I have seen in my time watching baseball. Especially, it's underscored by the fact that he completely disintegrated in the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
He was terrible as soon as everybody knew he would be. But he was terrible as soon as the All-Star game ended and had like a couple of swings, like you say. That's not a cult hero,
doesn't
though.
Doesn't a cult hero have to be beloved and remembered and made sort of a legend? Like
yes.
The story grows every year.
Cult hero shouldn't be a trivia question.
Right.
Everybody should go, oh, yeah, Ryan Terrio. Of course, Ryan Terrio.
My nomination would have been Jose Cardinal.
Okay.
That's before my time, but from what I know, that's a really good one.
Jose Cardinal was beloved far beyond his baseball ability because he was goofy and he had weird injuries where his eyelids were stuck open or he was afraid of Glenn Allen Hill was the Spiders, but he had also, there's a picture of Jose Cardinal riding a penny farthing bicycle on the field.
But
yeah.
Counter argument, he's not white.
So
you're thinking a folk hero, Rick. That's different.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. That would be the definite. That's sort of like Bears fringe wide receiver category, right? Mike Hess.
Gotta have him.
Tanner Gentry. Right. There's any number of those.
Okay. Does Jose Cardinal? Does his playing career, having played for the Giants, Angels, Indians, Cardinals, Brewers, Cubs, Phillies, Mets, and Royals, in any way take away from the fact that he is
maybe
the Cubs cult hero?
Okay, what about Sean Dunstan?
I think he's...
Sean O'Meter was a huge thing. Sean O'Meter.
Isn't he too good to have been a cult figure?
Maybe.
I think he's just too good to have been a cult figure. Like, Ryan Terrio was an okay player for two seasons. He was interesting on the base paths in that he was just fast enough to get himself in horrendous amounts of trouble. And screamed at by everybody who was at a ball game. He wasn't good enough to play shortstop. He had some fun moments, but that was just about it.
Don't you have to still be beloved? Ryan Terrio burned his bridge when he said he's on the right side of the rivalry when he went to St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's not still loved.
I love
this topic.
Right? So
light him up.
So here's your White Sox.
Well, let me offer one more.
Okay.
Let me offer one more cup. Henry Rodriguez.
Yeah. But they did the O. Henry thing elsewhere.
Sure, you had that. Yeah, that's true.
That came.
I think of him more Montreal.
Yeah, that came with
him. That's true. He was the also outfielder for that Sammy Sosa run.
He was good.
He was good. It was cult-ish if it wasn't culty enough for you.
Jody Davis? Or is that folk hero-y?
Yeah.
It's
folk hero-y.
He was fine.
Matt Merton,
Kyle
did he get enough?
No.
Oh, I think too many people truly hated Kyle Farnsworth.
That's now, true. Some people nominated Turk Wendell, but I think that's more of baseball eccentric.
Shooter? Rod Beck? Too good.
No, nope,
that's
it. Rod Beck.
Shooter. Make it Shooter.
Rod Beck.
Rod Beck is your Cubs cult hero.
That's a great name.
There you go.
Good pull.
Shooter.
Good pull.
That's great.
Good job.
Show's over. Yeah. Let's go. Well done.
So here we go. Okay.
Now, for the White Sox, MLB.com says this guy's time in the major leagues was brief but memorable. He signed with the White Sox prior to the season at the age of 35. Using a sub-87-mile-an-hour fastball and a 68-mile-an-hour changeup. And his home appearances were preceded by a gong ringing out at U.S. Cellular Field.
Oh, boy.
He posted a 2.31 ERA and 19 saves and 59 appearances on his way to finishing second in AL Rookie of the Year award voting. I bring you Shingo Takatsu.
Yeah.
I would say exotic novelty more than cult hero.
It's too short-lived.
Now, I get...
Is Uribe too good?
Uribe is great.
That's close.
Uribe's on, he's on the team photo, but hold on a second here. I don't get the chance to do this often. If you know me well...
Here we go.
If you have been listening to
nobody's
me...
Nobody's talking about this.
Here's what nobody's talking about. It's the general manager. It's actually ownership.
I haven't heard this
said. The fish rots from the head. Nobody's talking about owners. So I think...
Yes, Dan, Bob?
That this is a Bob moment for me. Because, as you know, from the day I walked through the doors in mid-May of 1995, my White Sox fan life has been in large part devoted to the memory and love of Ivan Calderon.
Of course it has.
Okay? And if you go back at the little things that he did, all of the just quirky things, and he was pretty good. He had two different stints as a White Sox. He was expressive. He played hard. His shirt was flying open. His pants were coming off. He would be...
So he's on par with Juan Uribe.
He would well, in his dreams.
That's quite a par, sir.
I can't speak to this. I could find out because I know people who would know, but I don't think on his best day he approached Juan Uribe territory in that regard.
Well...
He also died in spectacular fashion, shot repeatedly in the back.
Spectacular fashion! Yeah, he was... Was it the back?
Shot in the back several times at point-blank range.
I think it was seven times.
That'll do it.
I mean, would you totally rule that out for your rebase? That's like the range of possibilities?
But shot in the back seven times point. That's a little different than like tap the other shoulder and lean the other way, right?
Well, what are we doing? Is this like Johnny Vandermeer's back-to-back no-hitters? Well, nobody's going to top seven. Sure, it might be six. Nobody's going over seven.
That's a lot of shots in the back. Without like, did it take that many for him to fall down or like notice?
Are you declaring prima nocta on this? Are you saying it's Ivan Calderon or nothing?
Yeah, I mean, Uribe's in the team photo.
I'd like to take other nominations,
Nah.
Carcavice
is probably too material.
Okay, how about Tadahito Iguchi? Is that, because it's culty. He was good, but definitely not good enough. He gets this extra boost of cult following because of the way Kenny Williams has talked
the video scouting.
About what it took to get him there. He absolutely mattered to a World Series champion.
Three-run home run against the Red Sox,
that
right?
Matters.
And the wild play when he was falling over and up the ball. And that, before his head
ridiculous.
Hit the ground, he
ridiculous
threw
play.
Sidearm, yeah.
Underneath his own body. Now, see, the player that I would like to be cult hero for the White Sox is not eligible based on the number of teams he played for. El Duque. I mean, that guy, that is the gutsiest relief appearance I have ever seen or will ever happen against Boston. That is the gutsiest relief appearance of all time, but he's played for too many teams and it doesn't fit. He's not just the White Sox.
Oh, Scotty Potts.
Too annoying.
Aaron Rowan is a good one, too.
Honestly, I'm going to
bag on Rowan here, but he and Scotty Potts are probably both too good.
Probably.
I mean, I know that, you know, they were great players and probably a little overrated at times, but probably too good.
Jose Valentin, for all the moments he's had against the Cubs. Ooh. Carlos Lee is a good one, too.
Jose Valentin was like a 32 home run shortstop.
Totally clean, too.
His mustache had steroids in it. I mean,
saving those for later. It's the first game of a doubleheader.
I remember when we need these
for the second.
He came up to the booth and we interviewed him, and Jose Valentin, I was looking. And
his veins have veins.
I was staring at his forearm. He just sort of idly turned his hand.
And there's a needle.
And no, you could see the sinews literally rippling like it was some sort of android or something. It was freakish. All he did was roll his thumb over. I don't know if this is distal or I forgot the term for it, but it was just like you could like hear these like crackling muscles in it. Like, oh my God. Like that's not right.
Welcome back to The Score. Jose Valentin joining us. Jose, come on.
Dude.
Come on,
man. Seriously? Really? I mean, come on.
So oh, some good ask if that was a prayer A in his arm?
A lot of texts asking what about Danks? Mm-hmm. Either Jordan or John. I think neither really qualify.
If they did the scapegoat list, it'd be Matt Thornton by
oh my
a mile.
God. That was my favorite. I love my early days on The Score, the first couple of years. You'd walk in, you'd do the 10 to midnight show, and Ronji would be there yelling and screaming in a post-game show. And if you didn't have to, because I missed the last couple innings on the train coming in, and I never had to ask whether Matt Thornton pitched. I just had to look at the call screener, and if it was full, Matt Thornton pitched, and if it wasn't, he didn't. That's
funny.
How you knew.
That's funny.
That's how you knew.
Craig Graybeck is not a bad name either, the little hurt.
It's pretty good.
That's more along the lines of Ryan Terrio, though. That's much more
what about,
sort of folk hero. Although the Craig Graybeck home run off of Nolan Ryan, that was a thing.
Maybe it's a stupid question, but I'm just going to say it because I like the name. I like the guy. Bill Melton's too good, right?
Oh, way too good.
Yeah, way too good.
Yeah.
Way too good for cult hero.
Way too good.
Okay.
I'm too good.
Yeah, you're closer to like Herbert the Milkman Perry.
Fair enough.
You know?
Fair enough.
If you're talking third base. He like showed up. He had one pretty good year and a couple of good hits, and it was fun to say. And then did he actually exist?
Or did you know what he is? He's like the littler cousin of Matt Albers.
Did we collectively
make Matt Albers should be baseball's cult hero, yeah. By the way.
Fat Albers? He's Fat Cutler.
That's amazing.
Right? That double he got against the Nationals, yes. I will never forget that.
Yes, he was throwing up.
What a gift.
Yeah, they had to bring oxygen out to second base.
I remember doing...
But seriously, I think we collectively made up Herbert Perry. It's like Mandela effect. I don't think there was a Herbert Perry. I think something happened in the time-space continuum. He was put in the Matrix. Somebody retroactively like put him in a Wikipedia aspect of reality.
Herbert Perry and Matt Albert both have the same characteristic in that you saw them in a uniform and you were like, oh, what player's dad got to dress up as a ball player today? Because that's what they look like. They look like somebody's dad got out there to play. Herbert Perry played from 94 to 04.
No way.
Yes.
No, I don't buy it.
Yes. 3 years with the Indians, a year with the Devil Rays, two with the Wild, year and a half with the White Sox, then a glorious end to a season, three seasons with the Rangers.
Oh, Sky Point for the Warren Newson references. The good deacon, Warren Newson, who had this violent, lashing swing that could occasionally drive the ball to the left center field warning track. Like, everything, it was always opposite field.
WTP.
Yeah, he looked like he should be powerful,
yeah.
But the ball, I'd love to see his exit velocities, because it would be like six. It never went anywhere.
Not enough. James Fegan, who covers the White Sox for The Athletic, is going to join us in just a couple. We'll ask him who the cult hero for the White Sox should be in. You know, more meaningful questions about the 2020 team as well. Bernstein and McKnight in for Lawrence on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.